type 2 diabetes reversible? Is sugar harmful? Does sugar have different names? Is obesity a disease? What is fasting? How safe is the keto diet? This series of The Medicine Box talks to health and nutrition experts to break down answers to these very questions and more so that you can aim to be your healthiest best.
Hello and welcome to The Medicine Box on CNBCTV18.com with me, your host, Ekta Batra. This podcast aims to give you an insight on all things pharma and health, from discussing trends in the industry to key issues in health with all the relevant experts. And this series of The Medicine Box is focused on exactly that: health, nutrition and wellness. Our guest on today's podcast is Dr. Vishakha Shivdasani, a medical doctor who specializes in treating lifestyle diseases such as diabetes, heart disease and obesity via medicine and nutrition. Dr. Vishakha has been writing a monthly column for the newspaper Mint for the past 7 years and is the former vice president of South Bombay Medical Association of Doctors. And our topic for discussion today is none other than the most Googled diet of 2018, the keto diet. What is it? Who should follow it? And is it safe and sustainable? Hi, Dr. Vishakha. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ekta. Thank you for having me.
Okay, let's start, Dr. Vishakha, with a basic on what exactly is the keto diet.
So the keto diet is basically a very high fat, medium protein, and a very low carbohydrate diet. What it aims to do is put your body in a state of ketosis. When your body is in this metabolic state, you start burning fat for fuel. So instead of burning carbohydrate for fuel, which is what traditionally our, you know, we've been doing for all our lives, there is a shift, a metabolic shift from burning carb or burning sugar to burning fat. And that is what causes the rapid weight loss.
Why exactly has the keto diet become so popular now?
Because it's everywhere. You watch, so any kind of social media, Facebook, YouTube, television, we're doing a podcast on it. Mm. I mean, you know, everywhere you see it. And why wouldn't you? Because it's not really a fad. You know, when you suddenly see your friend after a couple of months who shrunk, but who shrunk eating and drinking and doing whatever you have been told is taboo and off bounds, off limits. Traditionally, historically, we are told if you need to lose weight and, you know, you're dieting, you need to eat less, you need to count your calories, you need to be off limits for so many foods, which also happens with the keto, but not the kind of food which we're traditionally used to be told not to. Now, suddenly there is a diet where you don't have to count your calories, you're allowed to eat so much fat, and you keep so full, which is, you know, a big thing, because in traditional diets, you're always starving, you're always looking forward to your next meal, as opposed to this. So there is such a big shift in this perception of how you can lose weight. It's going to gain popularity because then everyone wants to try it.
The keto diet per se has probably existed in history all the way back to the 1920s.
Yes.
There's evidence that it existed.
That's
even
right.
At that point in time. So there are medical benefits to this particular diet. I'm going to get to, you know, what you can eat and what you can't eat. But what are the medical benefits of following, say, a keto diet?
So in the 1920s, actually, when you know, it was used first, it was not used for weight loss. It was used, like you said, for medical benefits, neurology. Yeah, so it was first used in epilepsy, which has now made a big comeback. So medically, the science, the stream of medical science that's using keto diet more than anything else is neurology, especially for childhood epilepsy. In the West, they're using it a lot for conditions like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, where there is no real cure even in allopathy. So they're using it to prevent the further degeneration. Even in motor neuron diseases like ALS, it's a huge breakthrough, you know, where you're using an alternative source of fuel. So you're using it for that. Then they're also using it for diabetes, for polycystic ovaries, for any condition where you need to reduce your sugar and your insulin, which is exactly what your ketogenic diet does for you. That's where, those are the medical conditions where it's really going to help.
So what is the medical aspect of it? What exactly does the keto diet do, which helps in reversing all of the conditions that we've spoken about, even epilepsy, for example?
Well,
or reducing epilepsy, not necessarily reversing it.
That's correct, yeah. So to begin with, because they have found that most of these conditions are based on elevated sugar and therefore elevated insulin, because high insulin will follow any place where your sugar goes up. The next thing to happen is the insulin goes up. And what the keto diet does is it does not allow for the insulin level to go up at all because you're changing the pathway. So instead of using sugar, you're reducing your carbohydrate intake so drastically that now your cells are using your own body fat. And the fat in the diet that you're allowed are medium chain fatty acids, which are the only fatty acids like oils, the oils and butter, or grass-fed butter, coconut oil, olive oil, ghee, these are the oils that actually cross the blood-brain barrier and provide fuel to the brain. So this is an alternative source of energy. So on one hand, you're reducing your insulin, and the other hand, you're feeding your body, but you're feeding it with good fat. So the cumulative effect of this works for all these medical conditions.
So what has been the evidence, say, for example, when it comes to epilepsy and using the keto diet?
So there's not enough long-term study on this on a big cohort. So the short-term studies show that you can reduce the seizures significantly. You can reduce the deterioration of Parkinson's, of Alzheimer's, of even ALS, which is a huge thing. So you can reduce all of that. You can slow down the progression of these diseases. There's enough documented evidence now to show it. There's enough medical evidence to show that. As far as diabetes and polycystic ovaries are concerned, I mean, I see that at the clinic every day. You can reverse diabetes, type 2 diabetes in most cases, doing the ketogenic diet.
So is it just the ketogenic diet, or is it just a low carb, healthier diet which could probably reverse these conditions? What I'm trying to differentiate is that, is there something special about keto as opposed to, say, a low-carb, healthy diet which most people would probably follow and find it easier to follow?
Yeah. So there has to be a differentiation. For a person who is not metabolically dysfunctional, right? For a normal person, like, say, you and me, who doesn't have diabetes, doesn't have Alzheimer's, doesn't have epilepsy, a low-carb diet, but not necessarily a ketogenic diet, just a low-carb diet will help, will be as beneficial because you won't get that sugar spike, you won't get that insulin spike, and that's good enough. For somebody who is type 2 diabetes, for someone who's epileptic, you'll have to go one step further because they are already metabolically dysfunctional. So you will have to, for those people, they will have to adhere to a strict ketogenic diet.
Okay.
So it depends on which strata you come from, whether you're normal, metabolically dysfunctional or not.
The big question, Vishakha, is what is the keto diet? What can you eat and what can't you eat on the keto diet?
Okay, so let's start with what you can eat. You can eat all meats, right? So you can eat chicken, fish, red meat, bacon, pork, beef, all sorts of seafood, egg, but with the yolk because it is a high-fat diet. So that covers your meat and your protein. For vegetarians, you'll have cheese, paneer, tofu, and you can have nuts, seeds, not all nuts. So nuts like cashews, which are high carbohydrate, we avoid those, but you can do macadamia, pecans, almonds, walnuts, all seeds you can do, flax, chia, pumpkin, all of those are good. Then you have your good fats, you have avocado, olives, and oils based out of those, apart from butter, ghee, what else? And you have the cruciferous and the green leafy vegetables. So a lot of vegetables are out of bounds, but you have the green leafy vegetables that you can use. So it's spinach, kale, baby spinach, rocket, rucola, asparagus, celery, mushrooms, cabbage, cauliflower, and then you need to get innovative with what you can do with them.
So what vegetables are out of bounds?
All the vegetables which what we call are high glycemic vegetables, the ones that have more sugar content. So you're looking at corn, potato, sweet potato, beetroot, carrot, those vegetables are out of bounds.
And why is that? Because it just has a
higher sugar content. No, sugar content. If it was higher fat content,
then
it would
okay
be.
For
yes,
the keto.
Absolutely, absolutely. You need to keep the sugar content to less than 30 grams a day.
Which would equal to what, if you could quantify it?
About, say, if you're using just the green leafy vegetables, so say four or five hand-sized servings of green leafy vegetables a day, and all your protein does have small amount of carb. So even if you do one breast of chicken or this or that, that'll add up to about, and a little cheese, it'll add up to about 7-10 grams of carb. So that plus your fat plus your 4-5 portions of vegetables a day would give you about 30 grams.
Can you describe a day for somebody following the ketogenic diet, non-vegetarian as well as vegetarian?
Sure. So typically for both groups, we always say you begin with what's called bulletproof coffee. right? Early morning. The idea is to start on a very high energy note and keeps you, you know, satiated so you don't feel hungry. So the bulletproof coffee is basically caffeine, so it's black coffee in water, and then you add coconut oil because that's your medium chain fatty acid which crosses the blood-brain barrier and gives you that instant kick and energy. So you use that, and you can, or you can use some clarified butter, and you just whisk it in a blender, and that's what you have as your short early morning. Right, but that keeps you so full you almost don't want to have breakfast to the next meal. So it works really well. It also tastes very nice. So you have that in the morning. Then if you want to eat your breakfast, if you're non-vegetarian, you can have eggs, you can do bacon, you can do any meat, any cold cuts. If you're not non-vegetarian, and if you're vegetarian, you can have cheese, you can do keto bread, you can do paneer in some form. So whether you just want to saute paneer or whether you want to do a paneer, you know, like a tikki, so you can do those kind of things like kebabs. That's your breakfast. Then for lunch, again, if you're non-vegetarian or vegetarian, the base of vegetables stays the same. So you'll do your green leafy vegetables either as a soup or a salad or a stir fry, and then you will cook it well. You'll toss it in your olive oil or your avocado oil, butter, any of the allowed fats, and then you'll have a small portion of your protein. So it can be any of the meats, or it will be cheese, or it will be same paneer or tofu.
Vishakha, this sounds very unsustainable also to a certain extent. I mean, an Indian meal doesn't consist of any of the things that you mentioned at this point. So it's a huge lifestyle change and adjustment that one has to go through. So is it worth it?
Well, it depends on what you're looking at, what your aim is. Are you trying to lose weight in a few weeks? Is that your aim? Is your aim to do it for the rest of your life? Is your aim? So we get people with different aims, right? I'll have someone from Bollywood who'll say, I need to stand in front of the camera and lose my inches in 4 weeks. So that is very different from someone who wants to do it for the rest of their life, or someone who's trying to look at diabetes. So everybody has different needs. So you need to see where you're starting at, and, you know, is it sustainable for the rest of your life? I don't prescribe it for anyone, really. I don't prescribe it for more than 7 or 8 weeks, not because it's not sustainable, because if you can't cook it, not for those reasons, but because I see a few nutritional deficiencies.
So what are these nutritional deficiencies which probably would emerge 7 to 8 weeks down the line?
So you can have a little bit of electrolyte imbalance. Yeah, you can have your magnesium levels going down, so you need to test those. For you can have people who are predisposed to kidney stones, gallbladder stones. Those people, actually, I hardly ever prescribe the keto diet, but those people can start getting, you know, symptoms. You can also get insomnia on the keto diet. You can get a lot of cramps. The first couple of weeks, you can get the keto flu. So the keto flu doesn't last long, and we have tricks and ways to combat all of these. So you don't really need to go through like the week 10 days of keto flu. So that typically happens because your electrolytes are really low. So if you tell somebody, make sure you're having rock salt, like limbu pani, but with rock salt, not table salt, because that's only sodium, and you're low in electrolytes, which is what you're going to get in rock salt, because you need the potassium and magnesium and all of it, which is not there in your table salt. So you use rock salt with lime and water. That will help indigestion. It will help that feeling of brain fog that you get with the keto flu, that feeling of, you know, feeling very lethargic, bone pain, body pain. So that disappears with that. You also supplement with magnesium. Magnesium will also take care of the cramps when you're exercising. It will help also with sleep. So we preempt these, you know, we don't wait for these symptoms to happen. We would preempt them by giving these supplements.
But you would recommend it for 4 to 6 weeks for, say, patients who need it as well? Say, for example, when it comes to epilepsy, etc. Or would you recommend that for a longer period of time?
For a longer period of time. See, luckily, now, even in India, though conventionally we're used to eating our roti, sabzi, dal, chawal, we're used to having our cereal in every meal. Luckily, there are lots and lots of options now where you can actually trick your body into believing it's having its carb, because you get keto bread, which is made with almond flour and psyllium husk, which is great for you. You can do keto chapatis, you can do cauliflower rice. So there is a swap for everything. So you're actually tricking your body even psychologically to believing you're having your carb. So if you're doing it for a medical condition, you need to do it longer. You need to find your swaps, and sustain it.
But is this a common man's diet? Because it doesn't sound like it. I don't see keto bread being available at your, you know, regular Kinara store. So is it a common man's diet?
Well, not at your Kinara store, but now it is available almost at every big specialty store. The problem with the keto diet is it's expensive, right? But because things are made with almond flour and flax and things like that, which are expensive products, I definitely see that changing maybe in a given, maybe even in a year or two. So because we're already seeing a shift. And you know, if you're not going to invest in your health, what are you going to invest in?
That point's taken, Vishakha. But you know, a couple of years ago, there was a diet called the Atkins diet, which became very popular, but then it rapidly fell off this table because of the concerns that came with it, because it was extremely high protein and it had a lot of meat content in the diet as well. Do you have any such concerns with the keto, that it's a fad, it might not stay?
I don't think it's a fad, because I've seen the difference in my patients' reports, and I've seen it, you know, day after day. My concern with the keto diet is people who cannot do it, who are still doing it, right? People with gallbladder stones, in my mind, should not be doing the keto diet. People with kidney stones should not be doing the keto diet. I don't prescribe the keto diet to pregnant women. I don't prescribe the diet to someone who has had already a cardiac problem. I mean, you know, if you're someone who's had an angioplasty or a bypass, I would not prescribe it to any of these people. I know there are lots of people who love the keto, who will pounce on me and say, but there is enough and more scientific evidence to say that even with the even with these groups of people, you can still do it. My thing is, it's not long enough and the cohort is not big enough to prove it. And maybe I'm a conservative doctor, but I like to play it safe than sorry. And there are lots of other things that you can do for these groups of people which will give you the same effect, which is not so strict, not so stringent, and you'll still have all the benefits, the health benefits. So why would I?
When you described what somebody should be eating in the keto diet, a lot of it contains meat and it contains a lot of high fat food. Expensive is one thing, but there is a whole school of thought that people should probably be venturing towards a plant-based diet. So in that sense, this is completely converse to that, to a large extent.
So my problem with the keto diet is not that it's too much protein. It's that the kind of protein that they promote, the high-fat protein, you know, in fact, The Guardian last week actually wrote something, published this in the UK, that bacon, for instance, is very high in nitrates and nitrites, right, which is cancer producing. So my problem with the protein is that if you're going to do lean meats, if you're going to do seafood and you're going to fish and you're going to do salmon, you're going to do eggs, by all means do it for the rest of your life. You don't need to go vegan, you don't need to be vegetarian for that, because there are lots and lots of studies to show over long periods of time that that kind of Mediterranean diet works for you way better than a vegetarian diet does, right? My problem is the high fat diet, which is not organic and which is, if something is going to make you thin and skinny but going to give you cancer 15 years down the line, it just doesn't serve the purpose. You have to be thin and fit, not thin and sick. So I don't see that, unless you're telling me you're getting organic GMO grass-fed meat, in which place, and in which case please let me know too. But you know, it's not possible to get this for the rest of your life, especially in our country. So my problem with the extra protein is that luckily it's not a very high protein diet, but to promote high fat protein, I have a problem with that. So when I prescribe a keto diet, I tell everybody, use natural fats. Don't use high processed meat fats. So they will use more avocado, more olives, more coconut. So those are natural fats. And those have been proven for decades. I mean, that it's only going to do you a world of good.
In 12 months, how many times can you do the keto diet? If you can't sustain it for a long period of time, that cannot become your lifestyle per se. How many times can you do it?
If you don't, if it's not showing up in your medical parameters, if you're not getting bloating, and if you don't have, you know, gallbladder stones, you can keep repeating it. You can do it for 7 weeks. Give yourself a break. I have a fixed protocol to wean off keto, so that I do with my patients to make sure that the weight doesn't come back on. Else, what's the point? So once they go off it, when they go on a holiday, the marriage season, wedding season, they're bored, they're craving their carbs, they go off it for a few weeks, and they return to that. So there is no fixed formula that you can do it only 5 times a year or 10 times a year. Do it as often, as long as you're feeling the medical benefits, you're feeling good, looking good, keep continuing it. Your medical parameters work in your favor. So because we make everyone repeat their medical parameters in 3 months.
Is this probably the healthiest type of diet that you think exists?
That's a catch question. No, like I said, I wouldn't give it to everybody, right? So I would not give
but
it to...
But should everybody be doing it, considering that it's, you know, turning the traditional thought towards food on its head?
I think what everybody should be doing long-term, sustainable for the rest of their lives, is try to be more fat burners than carb burners, bottom line. Whether you do it through keto or whether you just do it through a low-carb diet, you don't have to be so strict. It's okay to have your occasional carb. It's okay to do it instead of doing keto diets, you can do intermittent fasting. What is the premise of intermittent fasting? After 12 hours, your body goes into natural ketosis. Hmm. But then after 12 hours, 12 to 16 hours, where you're burning your own fat, you can allow yourself to eat your carb. So there are many ways that you can burn fat for fuel. Bottom line, if you're burning fat for fuel, you're going to get net-net the same effect. So whether you do keto or whether you find an alternative way to do it, that's what you need to do.
This entire concept of not enough studies with regards to keto, because there are some concerns that, you know, it might not be beneficial for certain type of cancers and vice versa as well. So how would one approach the keto diet with such a risk?
Cancer per se?
Yeah.
First of all, never try and venture into to a keto diet on your own. Always seek medical help if you're seeking it for a medical condition, right? And you will go to a specialist who knows about it. Yeah. So not necessarily every oncologist would or neurologist would know about it. Go to them with information, find the doctor who knows about it, who prescribes it, who can help you, who can take you along with it. As far as cancer is concerned, keto is a little controversial. There are studies that show it actually benefits it also, and there are quite a few studies now that show that. So you need to see what kind of cancer you have got, and because you know, that study is controversial, and then decide with your healthcare provider.
What about sugar then? That's a no-no in the keto?
Oh, absolute, complete no-no. And sugar in all forms. So sugar is not processed white sugar. That's only one form of sugar. So people say, oh, but honey is so healthy for you, jaggery is so healthy for you. But the effect on glucose and therefore the insulin surge is the same. So no honey, no glucose, no maple syrup, no agave, no nothing. No maltose, high fructose corn syrup, none of those.
Okay, so none of that is allowed. Not even your occasional dessert on the keto diet.
Have a keto dessert, there are tons of those. I allow my patients to have dark chocolate.
Vishakha, you know, that's on the keto diet, but we have a couple of Twitter queries, so I'm going to just run them by you on nutrition and wellness and get your response on that. In fact, one of them is actually about jaggery and whether that's a good replacement for sugar.
Again, if you're on the keto diet, then no, it's not an option at all. Off the keto diet, I tell everyone you can use jaggery if you're using it for kids, because healthy and weight loss are independent of each other, yeah, and jaggery is still going to cause that insulin surge, so it's not going to help you if you're trying to attain weight loss. But if you're just trying to just lead a regular healthy life and you're keeping your carbs low and if you're counting your carbs, sure, use the jaggery.
Okay, so that would be better, that's a better alternative to sugar, or is that
anything is better alternative to processed sugar, anything.
Okay.
It's shown medically that the effect of sugar on the brain is the same as cocaine. The addiction is the same as cocaine, and there are plenty, enough and more scientific studies to show that.
Absolutely. So following a diet without sugar entirely and with carbs would be the same thing?
Oh, I would definitely prefer a no-sugar diet with higher carbs coming from vegetables and fruits.
Lastly, is it good for someone to take supplements as nutrients, basically nutritional supplements, along with their diet? Does it even impact somebody?
Well, I think most of us in today's day and age require some supplement, right? Especially a multivitamin. Then, of course, based on your medical parameters, if you're low in B12, D3, you have to supplement. But if you're telling me, can you supplement it in place of food? No, you can't. Because you can never mimic Mother Nature 100%.
All right, Vishakha. On that note, we're going to wrap up the conversation. Thanks very much for joining in and helping us break down the popular keto diet and whether or not it is, you know, probably the best diet to follow at this point in time. I think the jury is still out at this point.
The jury is still out.
And we probably need a little more time and research to find out whether keto is the only way to go. Thanks very much for joining in.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.